Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
The FT.
The art world is once again homing in on London as Frieze Week is in prospect and a record number of fairs and events gets underway. The array of shows is already dizzying, and with the advent of Frieze Masters to join its older sister, now rechristened Frieze London, it seems that a new one is never very far over the horizon. And in March of next year, the team behind Hong Kong's Art HK will launch Art 13 in London. But is there a saturation point? Are we in danger of fatigue? I'm Jan Daly, the FT's arts editor, and joining me to discuss this are Stephanie Diekvors, the director of Art 13, Thomas Dane, a prominent dealer and gallerist, and Georgina Adam, the FT's collecting columnist and editor-at-large of the art newspaper. Stephanie, tell us about your plans for Art 13. I believe it's in March of next year.
Yes, indeed. The fair will launch in March next year at the Olympia Grand Hall in London. It will be a global art fair incorporating around 120 galleries from across the globe, whereby we will be showcasing young and emerging as well as established galleries.
Sounds fantastic. Thomas, what are you doing with the Thomas Dane Gallery during the Frieze season?
We're going to be showing at Frieze London and at Frieze Masters, so we're doing both.
Yes,
which for a medium-sized gallery is a lot of logistics.
That's quite a stretch. And Georgina, as critic, reporter and commentator and all-round surveyor of the scene, at a rough estimate, how many shows and events will you be visiting, do you think, in about 10 days?
Gosh, probably more than I would have time to really look at properly, because there really are an awful lot. And, of course, not just in England. I think the biggest change I've noticed in my quite long career now covering the art market is the amount I travel today compared to the amount I travelled 15, 20 years ago.
It's certainly true that at the as soon as Frieze is over, everybody zooms over the channel to FIAC, which comes next, and so it goes on. Thomas, do you think there is a danger that medium-sized galleries in particular find it difficult to stand out in such a crowded landscape?
I think it really depends how they approach it. I don't think there's, from a small gallery, a medium-sized gallery to a large gallery, I think it's how you approach it, which fairs you choose to do and what's the quality and your objectives. Larger galleries have the possibility to do many, many fairs with different staff, not always the director attending maybe every opening.
How many do you do a year?
We do three. Very conventional ones. Now four with Frieze Masters. Mm.
Stephanie, in such a landscape, how will Art 13 make its mark? How will it be different?
We think that we will be unique in various aspects, but I think the important one to point out is that we really try to bring a global art fair to the West, and especially here to London. Because from our experience with the art fair in Hong Kong, we've seen how interesting it is to create a true dialogue between Western and non-Western galleries. And from these, having observed that the discussions, observing London, how it's really approaching to be a global art city, we want to replicate that here and change it and make it really relevant to the market here.
So you think that our notion of international is actually a bit narrow? I mean, that we think of international, we're just thinking Europe and a bit of America.
I do think that, of course, fairs as well as biennales are, branching out and see things more globally. But I think, obviously with fairs being, oversubscribed with, it's far more difficult for an established fair to open up to new entrants. I mean, Thomas, I'm sure from Basel how difficult it is to show there.
And I would say that's one of the good things about fair choices. But on the other hand, I've seen, for example, Pinter Art Fair, which we might have considered doing because we have a strong Latin American artist base. But I think we chose probably not to do it, and I don't want to be damning of Pinter, but I think it struggles because probably there isn't a big enough South American collector base here or people willing to travel to London from South America for Pinter. In the end, the galleries are going to be much more attracted to doing the fair at Rio, where they have the collector base there.
I think that's actually a really interesting example, because we believe that the idea that you basically label or have specialized fairs is maybe, you know, you spoke about sort of Western approaches, and I feel that that's maybe something that we at least feel is slightly outdated, and that because every, you know, being it African art, Middle Eastern, Asian art, we think it needs to be a universal discourse in a way. And therefore, of course, we would hope, you know, and to have South American, you know, being in the same fair as European, American, yes, and Asian galleries and Middle Eastern, and basically, you know, showing art from different areas, but in one event.
And does Art 13 concentrate only on contemporary or modern and contemporary? Or?
We will have modern and contemporary art because we think that the showcasing of tradition is very important, and the historical roots. And actually, I think especially looking at non-Western art, that's moving forward a very interesting point of view. But there will certainly be a bigger emphasis on more contemporary works.
Coming back to what you said about not wanting to typecast yourself in a sense, I think one of the reproaches that's made of this plethora of new fairs is that they're slightly indistinguishable one from the other. You tend to see the same works of art in the same galleries, and you fly half across the world to see something that very much resembles what you already know. And I actually think that there's quite a future for fairs in typecasting away themselves. For example, Art Dubai, which has done very well being a fair that when you go there, you do see different things. I've just come back from Vienna, where I went to Vienna Fair, where there were a lot of Eastern European galleries I wouldn't have seen somewhere else. So I think one size really doesn't fit all, and that there's a real future for regional fairs that do a good job of bringing regional galleries and regional artists to a greater attention of the outside world.
Yeah, no, I would totally agree with that. And I think you made a very good example with Art Dubai, because I think it's also very important to always ensure that the fair caters to the needs of the audience locally. And locally, I don't mean locally as in small, because, for example, I think, you know, Dubai, it's very important to develop a regional art scene all over. I mean, as, you know, from art schools to artists to galleries and critical mass. And I think London is a very global city, and therefore I think it makes a lot of sense to bring global galleries to London.
One thing with Fries, colleagues of mine who've got galleries in Europe, could find it difficult to attract London collectors, especially the smaller, medium-sized galleries. And so maybe some have decided not to do Fries. How do you plan to make sure that the galleries that you're inviting really have the opportunity to meet and deal with some of the London collectors that they wouldn't necessarily know?
We are looking at, I mean, when I say London collectors, I think that the London collector base is very varied, and of course with us, you know, attracting and bringing galleries from, let's say, India, the Middle East, of course we're also particularly targeting people who live here, have second homes here, have families here that are not originally from London. So of course, and I think that is a very interesting market to look at. I think in generally fair organizers can do more, and I think it's equally easier in a smaller event to really work with collectors and introduce collectors and gallerists. And it's something that I've heard a lot also over the past few months, that galleries say, often organizers seem to think, okay, they bring the galleries to a place, they invite the collectors, and then they let them get on with it. And I think that we can do far more to facilitate the connections, the meetings, the dialogue between collectors and galleries.
I would agree with that. I mean, having experience of doing fairs in Spain and Italy, I felt we didn't have enough connection with the collectors that were based there. And no one was, they wanted to help, but then their time was so, you know, they didn't have enough time really to help everybody there.
Yeah, I think we've learned that also from Hong Kong. I think it's really important, sort of also the idea of educating the exhibitors as well as the collectors, really simple things. I mean, I know galleries who do fairs in Spain, for example, who always will make sure they have a Spanish-speaking you know, assistant. So you, if that is the case, you should tell galleries beforehand. You know, I think it's really important to try to brief galleries when they come to wherever it is, sort of what the local customs might be not the right word, but what the local conditions are in order to make sure that they are being helped.
Well, I think that's what Hong Kong did. I seem to remember Hong Kong sent out instructions, well, not instructions, but guidelines to how to deal with the Chinese. And some of the most successful galleries in the Hong Kong Fair actually translated the labels into Chinese. All of these steps were very important, I think, for connecting.
One thing I wanted to ask you was, how do you motivate us to get motivated about another fair? One of the things that's so impressive about Frieze, and one thing Frieze did bring to London, was this energy and collective endeavour on the part of galleries and museums to try and make it an extraordinary week, which they've succeeded. How do you motivate us to get, you know, to want to go to that, to your fair, when we've already had a fair and we're doing others elsewhere?
I think there are lots of different ways, and some very big steps and some very small steps. So we will, of course, have a full VIP program. We are working with a lot of institutions, ensuring that there will be, you know, possibilities to see interesting exhibitions, and of course, overall to see interesting things at the fair. And I think that's actually the main point, that with all our marketing campaign, everything we will be sending you, it will look like, oh, that's something I haven't seen before. That's something new. That's maybe an artist I haven't come across. That's a gallery that has never shown in the West before. You know, it's this idea of discovery, I think, that we want to, you know, garner in each of us, really.
With so many fairs, how do you not hollow out your own gallery program? I.e., there's a problem often talked about, is the problem of supply. Finding enough artworks for your gallery programme plus for your fairs?
I think we probably take a different approach to a lot of galleries, and that we'll reinvent what we're doing each time. So we'll come up with a different approach. This year we're showing largely sculpture. Other galleries can have a very set approach. So as you said, you go to another side of the world, the other side of the world, and you're seeing exactly the same booth as you saw 2 months before. There's no easy answer to that question, but I think with supply, we don't have that much supply. All the artists we work with don't produce a lot of work, so we have to be very we have to really think out our booths and try and make it interesting for people visiting as well, thinking, well, maybe you've done something different this year rather than a repetition. I see so many repetitions at fairs.
And I think that's where I would agree with both of you. And I think it's also enabling galleries to showcase maybe work that they are not showing, because they're under this pressure to have the feeling that at each and every single art fair they need to show their most commercially successful artists potentially, or make sure that because otherwise artists, if you don't ask the artist to show a work at the fair, I mean, I've worked for galleries, you know, artists are very upset. So, you know, I think
I think there are both ways,
but if, you know, but there's also this idea of competition, and I think it's on galleries as well as fairs, allowing people, or, you know, getting people being more creative and, as you say, really reinvent potentially what they're showing and maybe focusing on something specific.
One thing I'd add to that is I think the success when fairs showcase or try to encourage galleries or have a system where they do one artist, because you cannot go to a fair with and see a new gallery which has all new artists and really understand anything. I think it's so difficult. When there's a single artist booth, it helps enormously, and you learn more.
Of course, this is always the big debate, though, isn't it? Because it's commercially more dangerous. Showing one artist, if somebody doesn't like that artist, is not becomes passionate about that artist,
yes,
then they walk right by, and it might be the kiss of death for your gallery, because they say, oh, he showed somebody who I really didn't like.
I agree with you that, of course, it's far more enlightening to see solo presentation. I also hear from galleries that it's a high risk. And the people who mainly take this risk are young and emerging galleries, where it really is about their livelihood if they don't sell a single piece. And I think that's maybe something one has to look at. It either you know, thinking how can galleries focus on an artist but also being able to do something that might help them commercially, or invite larger galleries who can financially take that risk to do the same thing.
I think that global scene is the one that you probably have, Georgina, have a very good eye on because you do travel so much. Do you think that there is a danger of saturation point in the international calendar, I mean? Because particularly in that sort of run of mid to late spring now, with the addition of Frieze New York, of course, in May, it makes for an absolute marathon. And if we find it exhausting, imagine if you were a collector who was interested in going and buying. I mean, how long are they going to spend? They're going to spend their whole lives going from fair to fair. After all, everyone is chasing the same people in a way, aren't they?
Absolutely, yes. Customers. Yes, in terms of customers, it's true, particularly at the higher end. There's not that many. And if you can imagine that next year we're going to have the Venice Biennale as well. Yes, I think that there is a danger of saturation. There is, of course, a certain amount of winnowing that goes on as well, because some have died, for example, Art Chicago, but then it was replaced by a new fair, which seems to have really been quite good. My question really to both Stephanie and to Thomas is, I have the impression that a number of these fairs are sort of successes, except commercially they're not perhaps that strong. For example, Frieze New York, which I think was acknowledged as being in many ways successful. People went there, the tent was excellent, the lighting was good. I'm not sure that sales were that strong.
I think from a gallery perspective, to do a fair which is commercially not successful, it's a lot of work getting it together, and it doesn't make sense.
At the top end of this market, we're seeing and still are seeing completely against all other economic trends, we're seeing extraordinary expansion. Do any of you see any sign of this bubble bursting, or do you feel it's a bubble, or do you feel it's quite strong enough to sustain itself?
From my experience now, looking especially at, which also is new for me and fascinating, at non-Western collectors, I think that has longevity and will continue to grow. I really do think that there's potential and there's increasing interest in art as also as collecting and not only seeing.
All markets are cyclical.
To a degree, but this proved I would argue that it hasn't gone with this cycle. For some reason, I think partly is that expanding interest that you're talking about. Mm. Because what people don't register when they're looking at the auctions and they see the success of the auctions is how many artists' work has fallen in value. And we tend to look at just what's risen.
That's a good point. Yeah.
And there are lots of artists where people were paying a lot more money 4 years ago, 5 years ago. And there's probably a backlog of work waiting to be sold because people no longer have the confidence. But
that is particularly the problem in contemporary art, which is fashion-driven. Let's face it, with fashion, you always want the big new thing, don't you? And I did an interesting exercise. I went and looked. It was Art Basel's 40th anniversary, I think, this year or previous year. And I went and looked at some of the early catalogues. Well, it was a very different animal, but an awful lot of the artists who were really headlined then you haven't heard of today, which was quite interesting.
Yes,
it's quite salutary, isn't it? And not only in the contemporary field, because you remember when that wonderful Constable sold at Christie's recently, the one that had come from Spain, from the Thyssen Bornemisza collection. And for once, I did get my wonderful financial colleagues here to do some number crunching, which they're very, very good at. And I gave them the price it was bought for in 1989, pretty sure it was, and gave them the price it was likely to sell for, i.e. the low estimate, which is exactly what it made. It made 20 million in 2012, and said, what does this represent? And it represents, in fact, a huge loss. Even if you take the inflation value of the money, the lost opportunity of opportunity costs, lost interest and all the rest. So in fact, this iconic picture, this superb Constable, had over 25 nearly years represented a huge loss compared to taking those millions. And even if you put them in the building society, you would have made more money.
Well, 1989 was the top of the last art market bubble.
That is the thing. And it was bought very high.
Mm-hmm. Yes, if you buy at the very top, it's going to be you're going to struggle to recuperate. And as you say, it is a question of
on the other hand, with fashion. Fashion as well, with Francis Bacon, you know, personally a huge fan, but pictures bought at the height in 89 have then succeeded and amazingly come back and sold for vast sums.
But just coming back to art fairs and what we will be seeing next week, I think that's why it's so important. What I think we all work towards, you, Thomas, as a gallerist, and you, Georgina, as a critic, is that we really want to create connections between collectors who really collect out of, you know, reasons of passion and not investment. And I hope that we will be seeing lots of that next week and then as well in spring, of course, at our fair.
Well, that's a very, very nice note to end on. And I'm afraid we are out of time, although it's a fascinating subject and we could go on for a long time. So my very big thanks to Stephanie Dietfuss, Thomas Dane, Georgina Adam, and to you all for listening. You can read more about the current fair season and collecting on ft.com/arts and ft.com/collecting. Art 13 will launch in London on March the 1st, 2013. And you can find the Thomas Dane Gallery at both Frieze London and Frieze Masters. The Arts Podcast was produced by Nicholas Spencer.
For more downloads, go to ft.com/podcasts.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is all about health prevention and vaccines. I speak to Kate Hashey at GSK.
For every dollar invested in improving health, there's an economic return of $2 to $4.
Murray Aitken at IQVIA Institute for Human Data Science.
The benefits of adult vaccination are compelling.
And David Sinclair at the International Longevity Centre.
Preventable conditions amongst those aged 50 to 64 in the UK cost $27 billion a year.
Listen to the full episode of the Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts.